Hello, everyone, and welcome to GRCast episode 12, we think. I'm joined in the studio this week by Matt Grauka.
Hello.
And Charles Battersby.
Good morning.
Well, both of our regular listeners are going to be a little confused because instead of hearing the crazy little jazz tune, they just heard some sweet rock music. You guys in the studio don't know this, but I have started something that I'm calling an indie music showcase where I've been hunting down various artists that do video game music, chip tunes, rock covers, whatever, and asking them if they would like their music featured on the show. And I had some takers. That music you just heard was Playing With Power, is the name of the band, off their album Pause I'd Rather Play. You may have recognized it as the theme from Final Fantasy in the Gurgu Volcano section of that game. It's good. It's really good. You can go to their website at playingwithpower.com. They're also running a Kickstarter that you're going to want to donate to get their next album made. So, super interesting. I'll actually be featuring more music from them at the outro. And we might take a little break for some chiptunes in the middle between games and the topic. So, very exciting. But until then, how about some games? Matt, what are you doing?
Well, it's been a few weeks since I've been on, so I've actually played quite a lot. I've limited it down to three. The first one is Resistance Burning Skies on the Vita. It's been out quite a while now, about a year. And the main reason that I wanted to bring it up is because it is just dreadful. I mean, there are so few plus points for this game that the fact that it was the first-person shooter on the Vita, it's just beyond me how Sony could allow it. It takes place around the invasion of the US, which is quite an interesting point for the Resistance franchise. And then you basically walk through, I think, six levels. They're about 45 minutes each. You shoot at a few things. The bullets don't always hit them, even though you've kind of got a headshot or whatever. And the voice acting's terrible. So that's one to miss. But the trophies are really, really easy, so maybe not.
Leave it to Matt to find the silver lining.
The great thing is you can get every single trophy in that game within one playthrough easily. And I think it's got about six golds, so it's fantastic trophies. But there's one that you can't get, and it's a gold, and it's play once online. And here's the just the professionalism of this game is summed up in this. You can no longer, I've heard that the online passes have expired now. And when you buy an online pass from the PlayStation Store, it doesn't always work. Sometimes it still doesn't let you into the online game. So I just don't know how that could happen. People are buying $7.99 online passes and still not being able to play online. And it doesn't help that there's no one playing it anyway. So I guess it kind of all evens out.
Maybe they could just sell the trophies. You just go online, you pay an $8 fee, and then you get a bunch of gold trophies as a easy way to build up your score there.
That sounds fantastic. I would do it. Set it up.
I'm always disconcerted by this subculture of players that will choose games based on how easy it is to get an achievement or a trophy from it.
I don't know. I mean, the thing about trophies and achievements are that I don't think anyone necessarily... Well, of course they do. They do buy games based on how easy the trophies and achievements are. But at the same time, I don't think there's anyone that would necessarily not play a game based on a difficult trophy, but a time-consuming trophy. If there's a game that's kind of 3 or 4 years old now, a sports game, and it requires that I play 1,000 hours of online to get the platinum, I'll look at that and think, well, is that worth my time? And then I'll think, well, if that's one of the goals from the game, is that kind of what the point of the game is? And then that'll put me off full stop anyway.
So that thing with the one match online and you have to pay for the online pass. That seems like a calculated effort by the developers, or Sony, doesn't it? Where they went,
oh, yeah.
Nobody's going to want to play this game online, so the only way we're going to get people to buy that pass is if we lock one trophy behind the paywall, and then they set it up that way. Now, if you want the platinum, $8.
I just love the way you use that phrase, lock a trophy behind the paywall.
It's true. They definitely planned it that way. And it's frustrating as hell because I've got every single trophy in that game except for that one. And the game was so bad that I feel I earned it. But there you go. Talking of bad games, the other one that I played was Painkiller Hell and Damnation. It came out on consoles here last week, I think, the 26th. And I think it's out there the 30th of July. So you've got a bit of a wait. You can buy it on PC. It is to those kind of old arena games what Resistance Burning Skies is to console games, to Call of Duty, and to the Resistance itself. It is just almost a parody. It's so bad. You bunny hop around the place. You shoot lots of enemies that kind of break apart for no reason, and then you move forward. There's no plot. The graphics are terrible. It's a pretty terrible game.
What was the subtitle of that?
Hell and Damnation.
That would make a great name for a drag queen. Hell and Damnation.
Sadly, no drag queens in the game, but there are old people that you can shoot and midgets. So we've got almost everything covered there, I think. It's you'd think that the online would be the focus, but there's no one playing it online. It's been out a week and I've seen two servers. So, another one to avoid anyway.
I think people should gamble less on the online portion of a game. If you're not Call of Duty and you're not Battlefield and you're not like, you know, Uncharted or The Last of Us, some huge big name game, it can't be worth it to pay for the servers or whatever else, because nobody plays them. They play them for 2 minutes for the novelty, and then they go, well, I'm already level 46 on Call of Duty for the third time. I might as well just keep working on that.
But, you know, it's funny, because, like, if you play Black Ops 2 on the Wii U, there's kind of, like, 300 people playing it, and I sit there after playing on the Xbox 360 with 100,000 people playing it and going, my God, no one's playing on the Wii U. And then you go into Painkiller, and you realize there are literally kind of less than 10 people playing this game. There is almost literally no one playing it. Most of the time, there is no one playing it. And when you do play it, I got into a game last night. It was laggy as hell, and the guy basically spent his time shooting at me. It was like you just defeat as many waves as you can. And he just decided that we were enemies and that he was going to try and make my life as difficult as possible. So I left. And then there was no other games. I haven't seen one other game since then.
I wonder if that's a depressing experience for a developer. You put your game out there and you think, this is going to be so exciting, let's watch the numbers on the server or whatever when the game releases, and they open the floodgates and there's no flood. There's just a trickle. Six people come in, they kind of stand around. Maybe they shoot at each other, they realize it's terrible, and then they go, never to return.
I think the amount of people on the server is probably the least of the developer's worries here. The floor moves. You can walk around and you can kind of see the grid that they've built the level on, and over that grid, when it pops up, the floor actually moves. So it's a game that could have used a little bit of fixing.
So I will not be playing Painkiller Hell and Damnation, probably. There are too many good games to play to bother with this.
That is probably fair. I mean, if you really love Quake and Unreal Tournament, there hasn't been a huge amount to pick from for probably this entire generation, you know, the Serious Sam and Unreal Tournament 3. And this is definitely in that kind of area, but it's whether you really, really want to play a bad example of that just to get your fix.
You know, it's interesting that you mention the Unreal games, because people are still playing the first Unreal tournament that came out 14 years ago. And if you reinstall that game on your PC and fire it up, you'll find there is a community still playing that that apparently is bigger than the one for this new game.
You hear that, Painkiller developers? You've really, really screwed up.
Matt takes some joy in rubbing it into their faces. I guess you could say they wasted your time, so now you're just gonna take it out on them for as often as possible. Is that fair?
No, I can't stay mad at them. I'm sure they had good intentions. Maybe they just had a few months to do the port. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Still a terrible game.
Well, what have you been playing anything good?
I've been playing Peace Walker an awful lot. I played Peace Walker originally on the PSP, and it's so much better to have the two analog sticks. I'm enjoying that again. I played The Last of Us. It's not a 10 out of 10 game. We'll leave it at that for now. I played Garfield's Wild Ride, which is an iOS game and an Android game. It's an endless runner. It's quite good fun, but it has got like the worst shop ever. You pick up coins as you're traveling through the level, and you can get maybe 200 to 300 each go through. And one of the more expensive items is kind of 500,000. Now I haven't done the maths. It takes probably about 3 minutes to get 300 coins. So, it will take you an awful long time to get that, unless you choose to pay, of course, which no one's suggesting that you do. You can get everything in this game just by playing, but there is the option to cut out 500 hours worth of work just as a side there. But you don't have to, no way.
To me, that's frustrating when they specifically say you will never have to pay to unlock everything. And then you look, and it would literally take like 1,000 hours to get the smallest thing. That's not the same. I mean, technically, sure, you could get it all without paying any money, but you're going to be bored of that shit long before you ever get there. I don't care how good the game is.
And the frustrating thing is, it's not even free to play. You have to pay to get the app.
That's very frustrating. I don't know. I don't mind the in-game cash shop if you give me the game for free, and then maybe I'll spend some money on it. Like, it is all I can do to not spend money on that damn Simpsons game. But if I had to pay for it beforehand, no, that would have been the amount that I paid, and that's it. So in other words, Matt, no, you haven't played anything good except The Last of Us, and that you didn't think was as good as anybody else.
Peace Walker. I'm loving that.
How many times have you played that game now? Every time you mention Metal Gear, I just want to scream.
Peace Walker, I'm on my second playthrough. The others far, far, far more. But hey, if you haven't played them, the Legacy Collection I think is available now. $50 for every single decent Metal Gear Solid game. Go and buy it, you fools.
Or you can be cool and you can get out an old Dreamcast and hunt down the software that ports the PlayStation version of the original game over to your Dreamcast. And I think I'm going to actually break out my copy of Dreamcast Metal Gear Solid and run through the original game again.
The value represented by that Legacy Collection is very difficult for me to ignore because I don't own any of the others at the moment. I don't own a single Metal Gear game, but I know that I would not sit down and play them, or I at least suspect that I wouldn't, because there's too much there, and if I couldn't start at the beginning and play through the whole thing, then I feel like I'd be just wasting my time. I want to try and sort out the story based on the information Matt gave me, but I don't think I have the time or the energy for it. It's the same way I want to read all the Game of Thrones novels from the beginning again, but I mean, it's a time investment to sit down and read those huge books, and so I'm just not going to do any of these things.
The story gets a little bit silly in Peace Walker, as far as, Metal Gear is silly, but I mean, all the rest is gold. You've got to think about it sometimes, but there aren't really that many plot holes. People like to think there are when they haven't really followed the plot, but there's not really. It's pretty tight. The answer's usually nanomachines.
So, nanomachines are to Metal Gear as magic is to any generic fantasy universe.
Almost. Almost. Except only in Metal Gear Solid 2 and Metal Gear Solid 4.
Well, it sounds like you're done because you played garbage all week and then had to play an old game to get any excitement, which is frustrating. I don't like that. Charles,
That's probably fair.
tell me what you've been playing. Tell me something good.
Well, I've had a completely different experience this week because I've been playing the preview code for Saints Row 4, which is spectacular.
See, this is what I want to hear. I want to hear about something new, and I want to hear about something good.
Yeah, so, based on this little chunk, which seems to be about 25% of the game, it's exactly what everybody who liked Saints Row 3 has been begging for the last 2 years. Wow, I'm completely flustered in trying to articulate just what a terrific game it is, because I've spent about 9 hours just playing this little preview of the game. It's not even the real game. I've been completely obsessed with it. And for those of you that don't know anything about Saints Row 4 or the Saints Row franchise, the original game, it was a sort of Grand Theft Auto knockoff, kind of, sort of, but the franchise has slowly built itself into being a very flamboyant, comedic game that's based more around humor and outrageousness and weird, crazy things to do, rather than being a gritty crime story. And Saints Row 4 takes that to the most farcical extreme that they can do by having your character as a gang boss become president of the United States, and you're a superhero too, fighting an alien invasion.
That idea of take this game, because the first one, like, thugged pretty hard. That game took itself way too seriously, I thought. The fact that they just went, you know what? We're not going to compete with Grand Theft Auto on, like, seriousness or story or whatever. Let's just go crazy. It was the smartest decision they ever made, because I've been playing 3 as it was free on PS Plus, and it's hysterical, and I don't think I would be playing it at all if it was just another, like, rip off. We're trying to be serious about thug life, Grand Theft Auto Simulator.
For Saints Row 4, they've taken a lot of things from Saints Row 3, and if you've played the DLC content, you remember there was a superhero level in one of the DLC packs, The Trouble with Clones, and now they've taken a lot of the things from that little pack and expanded on them. So now you're running around this virtual Matrix kind of world where you have powers kind of like Neo did in the movie, but they're also expanding them so that you're throwing ice balls and fireballs, and you can summon vehicles that you like because it's a virtual world. So you can create things that you need. Because nothing really exists there. There is no spoon and there is no steelport in this game. So it's a heaping dose of fan service.
It sounds like the kind of thing that would be right up my alley, especially. Sometimes I just need to turn my brain off, especially after playing like some pretty heavy games like The Last of Us and BioShock and stuff. It's like, all right, I just want to blow some stuff up. I want to shoot some people. I want a baseball bat that looks like a dick, and I want to hit somebody with it. The end.
Oh, and now instead of a penis-shaped baseball bat, you have an alien tentacle-shaped baseball bat. So it's your anal probe. Just to be clear, you're not actually probing anyone's anus with the baseball bat in the game. That's just me hypothesizing on what the original intent of the big alien tentacle bat might be.
As long as I can use my imagination, it's all good.
And it's very addictive. In order to power up your superpowers, you need to locate these little data clusters that are hidden around the levels. So on one hand, you're trying to get experience points and get money so that you can upgrade your, mundane things like, guns and cars. But then you also have an entirely different resource that you need to run around collecting in order to build up your superpowers.
The whole Saints Row thing is hilarious to me at this point because it kind of defines one of those franchises that people get so mad about. In a very short time, they've gone from, as you said earlier, being quite serious to being very not serious. And the transition between the two, there was one picture. You can almost pinpoint the exact moment that people realized that this transition was happening. And there was a picture released, and it was just of a park, and there was some people dancing, and there was someone wearing no clothes, and someone holding a sex aid as a weapon, and all sorts of things. And this was one picture, and half the people were going, this is going to be the most fantastic thing ever. I've never been interested in Saints Row before, and now I'm going to buy it. And the other half were saying, my God, it's just not the same game anymore. I'm never going to buy it ever again. And it's just one of those franchises where it's so obvious that the fan base has been split. It's interesting to watch.
I feel like they could only have gained people to like that game by going completely crazy. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I assume it is because they've ramped up the crazy with each new release. But the first one was, I mean, it was a fine game, but I've gone out of my way to finish without cheating every Grand Theft Auto game since 3 that they've released. And Saints Row 1 was just like, I could not relate to that world in any way. I just had to stop playing it.
Well, I do think that the new game is going to start sucking in new fans, you know, people that like superhero games, or if you like the prototype games or Hulk Ultimate Destruction, and you know, even City of Heroes, you know, people who want super-powered gameplay where they're flying around and shooting energy blasts, they're going to suddenly discover this new franchise, you know, and maybe people will be duped into thinking it's a superhero game when it's really a, you know, run around and, you know, kill people in a horrible manner game. But yeah, it does seem like, you know, this new transition they're taking for the fourth game is going to bring in a whole new fan base that may not be familiar with the franchise.
When they first announced it and showed the pictures and the little videos and everything, I got a big Infamous vibe off of it. Is that fair? Is there sort of a correlation between the two?
Yeah, there's a little bit of Infamous, a little bit of Crackdown. You know, it's essentially, you know, open world mechanics where, you know, it is a lot like Grand Theft Auto, let's be honest. You know, you are running around to, you know, power up your character and explore. And the franchise has slowly turned into something where instead of following the plot, you're put in this world and really encouraged to just run around and look for trouble. And in this new game, because you're on foot and flying and moving at tremendous speeds, you can get around town and find new activities to do or just trouble to get into at a really quick pace, because it still uses many of the maps from Saints Row 3, which were designed to be navigated by car. And now you're running around on foot with super jumping, and you can almost fly. You can glide so far, it's like flying. You know, now it is a game of, you know, just run around, cause craziness, get into trouble, pick fights, and there's always going to be something nearby for you to do.
I think, especially in these open world crime type games, a lot of people just have fun with, like, let's blow up enough stuff until the police come, and then we'll blow them up, and we'll just last as long as we can. Adding superpowers to that can only be a good thing.
Yes, and some of the superpowers will directly damage enemies, but the ones that were available in the preview code was just the ice blast that freezes enemies, so you still need to use your guns for a substantial portion of what I played. You know, there's superpowered hand-to-hand combat, but you know, using your superpowers to debuff people and then pull out the guns and just go trigger-happy, you know, that's still a viable form of gameplay.
I get the feeling I'm going to end up buying this. The more games I play, the more I feel like I just need something less linear. I just want to drop into a world and I want them to say, go do what you want, make your own fun, because I am perfectly capable of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this is going to be a very good one. You know, the part that I played, the story was very strong, the single-player campaign, and, you know, the running amok mode was great as well. And, you know, not to hype, you know, too much the superpowers, because you will have moments where your character unplugs from the Matrix and goes into the real world, and, you know, you don't have access to, you know, those superpowers, and you'll need to play in a more traditional Saints Row experience for at least part of the game.
Nice. I am looking forward to this now, and it might not have been something that was on my radar at all if they hadn't just put 3 out on PlayStation Plus. So there you go. PlayStation Plus wins again.
And for those of you that are just now discovering the franchise with Saints Row 3, make sure you get the Trouble with Clones DLC pack, because that adds in a brief superpowered mission.
The last time Charles recommended me DLC, it was Minerva's Den for Bioshock 2, and it was fantastic, so I'm guessing he knows what he talks about, and I am probably going to get that.
Damn straight.
Well, I know you wanted to mention the free games from Xbox Live Gold, Charles.
Oh, yes, I did. I've never been a huge fan of the Fable franchise. I play a little bit of them, but now that Fable 3 is available, it was available for free on Xbox Live a couple of weeks ago. They've switched over to a new game, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I think it was a really good idea of Microsoft to start with Fable 3 as the first free game in this series. A lot of people might have been thinking, hey, I've always meant to buy Fable 3, or, you know, I heard it wasn't as good as Fable 2. So it is a product that I think a lot of people would benefit by just doing their gold subscription. They were doing a $14 sale on 3 month subscriptions, so it was a really good investment if you were thinking, well, Fable 3 cost about $20, so why not just renew the subscription for the $15? And, you know, I've been having a decent amount of fun with Fable 3. The little bit of Fable 2 that I played was a little better, but I think starting with Fable 3 was a great way to entice people to join up with the new, with the new free game every 2 weeks policy.
I played Fable 3 for, I don't know, like an hour or two, I think. And after playing the first two and thinking they were fine, if not spectacular necessarily, I just sort of lost interest in it, I guess. I didn't even get to the point where you, like, become a king or something and have to make decisions. It was just like, well, this is just Fable again. I've played it twice before. I guess I don't really need to play it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people had that attitude when it first launched, that more of the same and not necessarily as whimsical and funny as the previous games.
I think part of the problem with the Fable games, especially 3, is that they kind of built up this world and this idea that you'd one day be the ruler and that you could kind of control things and that you'd need to save money or whatever. They focused too much on that, and it came down to a point where there was very little kind of day-to-day things to do. There weren't enough just straight missions to enjoy the game as a whole, because you was always looking forward to this one thing that ended up being a little underwhelming.
Well, speaking of underwhelming, they've just released the next game in the free game every 2 weeks policy, and they had originally said that Halo 3 and Assassin's Creed 2 were coming, so people just assumed those were going to be the next games, and now we're finding that Defense Grid is the next free game in the gold promotion.
I don't even know what that is.
Defense Grid is a tower defense game that is just fine on your Xbox, and it's a good game. People, you know, certainly responded positively when it came out, but it's a little underwhelming that you were expecting maybe a major franchise, and then you're getting something that was a downloadable arcade title.
Assassin's Creed 2 is coming on the 16th, though, so you are getting that this month. God knows when Halo's coming. But really, at this point, if you want Halo or Assassin's Creed 2, just don't pay for your subscription for a month, and you will buy those two games, no problem.
Yeah, that is another way of looking at it. But if you were kind of on the edge about whether or not to renew your gold subscription, this is... I guess a good justification, if you're the kind of person like me that waits until there's a big sale on Xbox Gold or on Xbox Live Gold, then this can just be that incentive to spring the extra couple of bucks to renew now.
A lot of people, I think, are kind of comparing PlayStation Plus and this whole gold games thing, and that's perhaps not the right way to look at it. I'm wondering if people would have still kind of compared them as so harshly if it wasn't for everything that happened with Microsoft over at E3. But, it's nice to get free games, especially if you're going to subscribe anyway. No one can knock But hey, Joe got Saints Row 3, and Xbox subscribers got Defense Grid. So.
More important than Saints Row 3, I got XCOM Enemy Unknown. I mean, that to me, that's mind-blowing because that is maybe the best game that was released last year. I mean, crazy. But I do agree that it's not necessarily fair to compare the two because with PlayStation Plus, I pay that money just for the games. Like, if there were no free games, they would be getting no money. That's all there is to it. With Xbox, you were already paying the money anyway for the whole service, and now they just tack the games on. Anyway, it's not like you went out of your way to pay money just for free games and then they're giving you shit.
By the way, talking of PlayStation Plus, the rumored content for next month, for August, is DMC Devil May Cry. So, pretty much a brand new game. That's for EU though, so I don't know whether you'll get it over there as well.
Probably not. There's been a couple months where you guys have gotten just like great ones, and we've gotten ones that are. Well, maybe they were great for some people, but I had just already played it, so that was the problem.
We've had 5 years of the US store being 10 times better than anything in the UK or Europe, and it's hilarious to now go onto the US blog after every PlayStation Plus and see people complain that your store isn't as good as ours anymore, because for ages we had no PlayStation 1 games. We'd have to wait 3 or 4 months after you got a digital release for us to get a digital release. And the Instant Game Collection has balanced that out completely. It is poetic justice after all this time.
Is there a chance since the PS4 is region free, does that mean that if they keep doing the free game thing that it's going to be the same everywhere, or do you think it's still going to be different depending on where you live?
I think it's going to be different. You'll just be able to open a US account or a UK account and do it anyway, which you can do now, to be fair, so.
I wasn't sure if it had any, I mean, I'm sure being region free, the system itself doesn't necessarily have anything to do with it. I just didn't know if that was more of their, like, we're trying to just give everything to everybody, you know, and be fair across the board, like a new policy of everyone gets the same stuff, or if it's just they're just being nice and saying you can import a game and open an account easier or something. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I expect for some reason they'll be rewarding UK for years and not us. Although, like I said, XCOM. If you haven't gotten XCOM, then yours isn't as good as ours. That's all there is to it.
We got it. We got it, and I think it's one of the ones that we've got for a year now. It's one of the staples.
It's not going to be the type of game a lot of people are probably going to like, but it begs to be played, and it is. I don't want to go on about XCOM anymore. It's fantastic. Charles, I want you to tell me about your play, though, before I talk about some games.
Oh, okay. Oh, and I have other games I can talk about as well.
Well, good. Then do that too.
Okay, so I've also been playing the demo code for Jane Jensen's Mobius. And for those of you who are not aware who Jane Jensen is, she's the designer that did the Gabriel Knight series of adventure games, and she had done a bunch of other really awesome adventure game series throughout her career, including something called Cognition that's currently an episodic release approaching its final release right about now. And Mobius is her big new opus.
I don't know that I had heard of this. I was familiar with Gabriel Knight, but I have not heard of Mobius.
Oh, well, Mobius has been marketed mostly through crowdfunding and through community-funded gaming, as they call it, where essentially all of Jane Jensen's fans have gotten together and just given her money in advance to make a new game for them.
It's sort of the standard model now that these days, and I like it a lot.
Yeah, for people who have a long career of delivering quality products, it is pretty cool that they can now reach a point where people are just essentially buying the thing in advance and, you know, paying out the middleman just because they know whatever Jane Jensen does, it's going to be good. And based on what, you know, the little bit that I've seen of Mobius, this does seem pretty good. It's still in a, you know, early development point where the code is a little buggy and, you know, the actual gameplay itself is clearly not what it's going to be at the full release. But we have some very interesting characters and an interesting story, and pretty good voice work as well.
It's a similar sort of adventure title to the older games that she's done, did you say?
Well, it's a classic adventure game, but of course it's running on a 3D engine now. So for players that have played any of the more modern adventure games, and the Cognition series is a good reference point, or if you played Jane Jensen's Grey Matter, which came out a few years ago, you know, it's a lot like that, where you have 3D character models on 2D backgrounds, and you know, a good deal of interaction. It's not the old 2D grainy point-and-click model. You know, there's a little more interaction with the game than just, you know, clicking constantly.
I feel like you're kind of a bigger adventure game person than I am, man.
Yeah, I mean, I love the old classics. I tend to think that anything that tries to update must be a good thing, because a lot of games either do it and do it badly, kind of like The Cave did, where it's got the basics, but then it goes kind of in the wrong direction. And then there's other games like maybe Gemini Rue, where they just try and do exactly as it used to be, even down to graphics. Anything that tries something new and does it well has got to be good for the genre.
Yeah, the premise behind this new game is that your character has a photographic memory. So to represent that in the game, you'll have sequences where your character looks at something, and then you get a picture of that on the screen, and you'll need to click different points on it to see how this character can kind of Sherlock Holmes his way into deducing the backstory of what this character has been through, based on, you know, these little data points that you click on. And then once you've completed that mini game, you'll launch into the story, and your character will have dialogue that you didn't know previously, before you had had him analyze this person. And there's also some sequences where, you know, there's a new mechanic where you'll need to find correlations between modern people and objects and their historical counterparts. So you have this, it's almost like a history lesson where you're going through playing this mini game to rule out historical figures that have certain qualities in common with a modern day person. So, you know, they are trying something new and different. But it's still, you know, it's still done with the witty dialogue that people will remember from the Gabriel Knight series.
Nice. That sounds surprisingly interesting. I'm not a huge adventure game guy, but I really like the Sherlock Holmesian deductions bit that you mentioned there. That sounds great.
Oh, but you had also mentioned talking about my play.
Yes, I think I have been eager to hear your pitch here.
All right, well, for those of you that don't know, aside from working in video games, I'm also a theater person, and I have a play which is inspired by the Fallout games and a little bit of inspiration from BioShock as well. It's called That Cute Radioactive Couple, and it should be running in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, by the time this podcast hit the air.
Nice. I wish I lived nearer. Michigan's just a little too far outside the bounds of me being able to make it out there, I'm afraid.
I would have loved to have you, but the show's going to be performing throughout this month, so any listeners that happen to be in or near New York City, pop by the Brick Theater and have a look at That Cute Radioactive Couple. You can actually see me on stage, acting.
Worth the price of admission, I am assured.
Damn straight.
Well, I don't have much to talk about in the way of games for this week. What I'm going to say might be an unpopular opinion. So, you know, I just finished The Last of Us recently. BioShock Infinite has been a big game. I've been playing a little bit of that again. I started playing Last of Us again and BioShock sort of at the same time as a way of comparing in my brain. And then I thought, I'm also going to compare this to what has been one of my other favorite games ever, just to see how I think they stack up for me. So I popped in the Game of the Year edition of Red Dead Redemption, and I've been playing that again too, and just sort of switching between all three as time goes on. And neither of these games are as good as Red Dead, and that's all there is to it.
Well, to be honest, Red Dead Redemption is a damn good game, and something that you can just play endlessly if you get that Game of the Year edition with all the zombies and all the extra mission packs.
I assumed Matt would have complaints there. I was kind of waiting for him to jump in and say, well, you're stupid or something.
Oh, you're probably right. I feel that The Last of Us, I don't want to talk about it too much because we have got our special coming up, but The Last of Us and BioShock both suffered from being shooters, basically. And yes, all right, Red Dead's basically a shooter as well, but since the focus is elsewhere, it kind of evens out. I can see that. I can see that Red Dead would be the better game. Just not the ending.
Well, I mean, if we're talking, I was sort of comparing them on various points in my mind, and I think that the story for BioShock might be the best because I'm a big fan of the whole crazy dimensional time travel stuff. The story in The Last of Us is probably the weakest because if you think about it, the story, like you pointed out, Matt, is just go here and then something goes wrong, so go somewhere else. It's the characters that make it good, not the story. The Last of Us probably has the best characters just on the strength of Joel and Ellie, but almost everybody in Red Dead is really memorable, so it might be closer to a tie. The characters in BioShock are kind of meh. They didn't really have a Sander Cohen that made me super excited. There was a couple other things I was thinking of, but I don't remember them now. Basically, I think it comes down to in Red Dead, I can go anywhere I want and do anything, and that I just like open world better than linear. At the end of the day, that's what I want. So, yeah, I'm sure that. Oh man, if you want to send hate mail because of that, podcast@gamesreviews.com. We are going to get into our topic in just a second, but first we are going to have a little music break. The song you're about to hear is by composer Jeff Ball off of his Tiny Barbarian DX The Serpent Lord OST album. I think it's a soundtrack for an actual little indie game. It's called Battle for the Sacrificial Babe. I think you're gonna like it. If you don't like chiptunes, listen to it anyway. It's really good. But if for some reason you just can't stand it, skip ahead like 2.5 minutes. So here it is.
We'll be right back.
are back and ready to talk about our topic. As I said, that was Jeff Ball off the Tiny Barbarian album, Battle for the Sacrificial Babe. I'm going to link to all of our musicians in the show notes, and you'll want to check that out. You can pick that album up for free or however much you choose to pay, and I think you should pay money because it's really good. Hopefully you listen to it. It's fantastic stuff. Matt, that means you.
You've sold me. I've got it. I'm going to go and buy it now.
Well, I'll guilt you into it because both Jeff Ball, who just did that chiptune you just heard, and the guys from Playing With Power, who did the rock intro and are also going to be doing the outro, you're going to be probably hearing more from both of those guys on future shows, and you're going to be hearing from all of them on their own episodes of Inside the Gamer Studio, which I think is pretty awesome.
Ooh.
All right, so topic of the week. Ouya, the Android console. How do we feel about it? I know Matt hates it.
In all fairness here on balance, I haven't actually used it, but it was one of those projects that everyone went mad for a week, and then it's come out and it's outselling the Xbox One and the PS4, despite the fact that the PS4 and Xbox One are 3 or 4 months away from release. It doesn't matter. That's still a story, an actual story, that has made it onto the front pages of lots of big websites. And to me, it just seems like it's been released on the idea that you'll be able to play Nintendo games on this little device and plug it into your TV. I can do that with my Nintendo consoles. I can do that with my PC. All the Android stuff is available elsewhere. And the week that it's been released, they have announced that Google are working on a console, and they have announced that Apple is looking to increase their gaming shares. And you just think, okay, this has been released at completely the wrong time.
Yeah, there is a sense that everybody that has their own proprietary operating system or that has their own stable of games is now going to just make their own piece of hardware that plugs into your TV. And it does boil down to the question of, well, why not just plug a regular computer into your television?
For the Ouya specifically, why not just play these games anywhere on your cell phone instead of on your TV? Because it's all the same games, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You just need to find a computer or a mobile device that's got an output port that will plug into your TV.
This is strange to me that this thing is even made. First of all, it's not fair to say it's outselling the PS4 and the Xbox One because it only costs $100. Of course it's going to outsell them. If every person bought 4 or 5 of them and you said more people or money-wise it's making more, then maybe, I guess, but even so, I mean, let's get real here. Ouya has already said that they're going to release a new console, like, every year, which, in a way, I sort of like, but in the end, it's still Android, and there aren't any games worth playing on it anyway.
You know, I mean,
maybe
when
that's not
was
fair
first
to say.
It's got ports of 20-year-old Final Fantasy games. Of course there's things worth playing. One of the things that I noticed when it was at Kickstarter and everyone was going mad, oh, it's a games console, but you've got complete control over it. You can hack and everything. Was people were saying, finally, a console is coming along that will compete with Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo. And people were agreeing with it. People were saying, that is 100% right. If I can have control over my system, I will buy this device. And it's come out and none of them have bought it. They're all going, I want a PS4 and an Xbox One. And I think that pretty much sums up everything we need to know about fans of the gaming industry.
I do think that the hardware itself isn't as important as knowing what kind of software is going to be available on it. And in terms of the major consoles, we do know that these big franchises that we love are definitely coming out for them. And in the current console generation, each of the consoles has had a handful of terrific games that haven't come out on PC or that haven't come out on the other consoles. So in terms of the Ouya or, you know, the Valve box or Mac coming out with its own iPhone with a cord that plugs into your TV and a video game controller built into it. these things aren't really as important in terms of just, what games are going to come out for this piece of hardware.
And it's not even just about that, although obviously it's a big thing. I mean, I was talking to Alison Hill the other day, and I suddenly realized that I'm buying a PS4 based almost entirely on the share button and the fact that I can watch other people over the cloud, which was my favorite thing about the about OnLive. And I'm so happy that Sony are taking it up and that you're actually going to be able to do these things, that I'm happy to buy a console based on that. There aren't any games at launch anyway that I would go so mad for as to buy the console, but that share button, it's got in my head. It really has.
The on that, I keep thinking that the more they make it easy for you to watch other people play games, and the more you want to watch other people play games. For some reason, I've never been a huge fan of just watching other people, because I figure it's not like professional football or something, which I also don't watch. But I can just go play a game. I couldn't go play professional football, so I understand why some people might want to watch that or whatever. But instead of watching somebody, I could play them. But my thought is, if there's an audience for it, for people to just want to sit there and watch other people play, we might finally start to see the real rise of that sort of esports thing that they've been trying to pull off for years. And I could totally be a color commentator for something like that.
Yeah, that's a subculture that I just don't understand. When I see people gathering in big stadiums to watch other people playing League of Legends, I just don't get how you can sit there and watch this kind of competitive gaming and not, as opposed to just participating in the gaming itself.
In all fairness, and I mean, I don't understand either, to just to kind of point that out, but in all fairness, there are people that are very, very good at those games, and it's not just kind of they've played it a lot, so they know all the tricks, like perhaps some of the people you might come across on Call of Duty. These are people that are just, they are almost sports-like in their reactions. It's very, very impressive.
I know the big one has been Counter-Strike in the past. There's a fantastic book that I think is called Game Boys, and it's about two different teams of Counter-Strike players, and they've each got a coach. One of them is the guy who like sold everything he owned because he really believes in esports, and he's leading the plucky underdogs, and the other guy is this like rich kid who's made millions of dollars with smart investments, and he just pays more for all the best players. And it's written so well that it really paints this awesome sports-like rivalry between these two teams, and they're talking about the rise and fall of esports throughout, and it's a fantastic book. If you're even the slightest bit interested in games, I would check it out. But the way they talk about that game, it is like a sport. Each team has like a playbook. They know all the maps. They know when a map comes up, they know exactly we're gonna run this play, and they know where to hit. They know who's grabbing what items and who needs to be covering him. And if they come down this hallway, we know how to react. If they come down that one, we know how to react. We know when to smoke and frag and throw a flash grenade. I only shoot three bullets at a time at this specific place because I know statistically there might be somebody there. It's really crazy.
But on
Oh
the other
my God,
hand,
that sounds like a systematic method of sucking the fun out of playing a game.
yeah, to me too. But it's interesting to read. I wouldn't want to play it.
On the other side of that, though, when I was on OnLive, part of the fun was in just kind of letting other people know that you're enjoying watching them play. Like, I probably didn't watch that much, but I liked people just being able to kind of tune in and click a little like button as if it was Facebook or whatever, because you did learn new things about the game. You did were able to kind of find secret areas or secret moves or do things like that, and it was very communal. I don't think that it's so much that you're watching another person play a game, but it's that you're doing it in a communal way. And Sony, of course, built on that by allowing other people, friends or strangers, I'm not sure that they've spoken too much about the feature, but by allowing them to take over via the cloud.
I think it would be a cool feature if you were able to like put up a flag or something into the cloud saying, I'm stuck on a game, whatever game, on this level. I don't know where to go. Someone help me. And then someone can pop into your game like the video feed, and then they can pull like a John Madden thing where they draw on a screen. They put an arrow with a little circle like, you need to go over here. They write on the screen, kill this guy, and then the door opens or whatever. That's just like a, instead of going to GameFAQs and searching it out and reading for days, you just say, I need help. And someone in the cloud jumps into your video feed and gives you a little tip like, here you go. I mean, it wouldn't be the kind of thing you'd want to just allow people to do all the time. That'd be obnoxious, but it could be cool. I don't know if it's something that'll ever happen.
I'm pretty sure
I'll be clear here. No. You should not have that easy access to hints and cheats and assistance from other players. That's a very bad step, and you don't want game designers to start making the game designed around the premise that people are going to be pulling in a social network of friends to help them solve the game. I won't call anyone out, but I was talking to a game designer a couple of years ago, and she had made her game an interactive theater experience where there was a built-in hint system, and she had essentially designed the game so that you would have to use the hint system. And I explained, that's wrong!
You know, I mean, I get where you're coming from, but when I'm playing a game, I'm never more than kind of 10 foot away from my PC. I've always got my smartphone at hand. It couldn't be any easier for me to get hints and tips. It couldn't be any easier for me to get access to people that are playing the game. All that I think that Sony have done here is make it more communal so that I can make friends and speak with people by doing this rather than going to game FAQs or whatever. I don't think it's necessarily any easier.
Well, I don't know. I've strongly opposed the second screen mentality that's been popping up in our media a lot, that, you know, television shows, they pop up their Twitter hashtag when you go to the commercial break so you can grab your phone during the commercial and tweet about what just happened. And, you know, there's the smart glass feature that Microsoft was talking about where you can have your little screen jammering and, bleeping and putting out information while you're supposed to be focusing on the TV. And I think that the easier that we make this, the bigger a problem it's going to be, and that, you know, the game should be played with your total focus on the game experience itself, and then when you turn the game off, that's when your Raptor account pops up and asks you to tweet about it, or when you turn the game off, you go and you hunt down, you know, the forums or game facts, and then you talk to people to get a hint about what you want to go back into the game and do. And I'll just cease my rant by saying I think there needs to be a clear definition between the activity of playing the game and the activity of talking about the game with other fans.
At the very least, it should be optional. I can agree there. There should never be a game where you need a smartphone to get through to the end. There should never be a game where you need to converse with other people to get through to the end. But it's an option. So long as it's an option, I'm happy to use it. Because I think that's cool. I think that's fantastic.
I'm with both of you guys in that I think it would be an interesting feature to have or whatever, but I don't think it should be a crutch where they just say, we can make it as hard as we want because it's so easy for them to just find the answer or whatever. But mostly my thought on that came from the fact that, like, that would be less annoying to me having to get help from somebody who may or may not be helpful than when I play any Nintendo game now, if I fail like twice, it just wants to play the game for me. It gets frustrated and it says, listen, you suck at Mario. Let Luigi do that shit for you because you're terrible. And then you press the button and Luigi just beats the level for you. And it's like, there you go, bitch. Play the next one.
Yeah, we need to discourage that mentality of game design.
I think so, too. That's annoying to me. It's interesting that we just talked about cloud gaming and esports and basically everything but the Ouya. Maybe that's telling of this topic in general.
I wouldn't say I hate it. I'd just say I'm not as interested in having the set-top box as I am in just having a decent PC with a cable running out to my television.
It's going to end up the same as that. Oh, what was it called? Was it called the Pi? And it was basically a £20 computer. And all it was is that it came in a little box. You had basically a chip that you plugged into a TV. And it was a computer. It was a programming environment. You could do whatever you want. And people were saying it's going to be fantastic because you build your own operating system and it will teach kids to program. They're going into schools, they're so cheap. It's going to teach kids to be ready to program software because that's what they're going to be doing when they grow up. In 30 years' time, that's all there's going to be. And it came out, and some very core users get excited for it every single time there's an update or whatever. And that's it. End up changing the world as we know it. It didn't end up even having much of a splash, but the people who bought it and enjoy it continue to buy it and enjoy it. And that's I think is the best we can hope for the Ouya.
You know who the Ouya is great for is the people who got paid like almost $10 million to make it when they only needed like 1.5 or $2 million. I bet that's a lot of they probably sit crooked on all the money in their wallet.
That is the magic of crowdfunding.
I wonder where all that money goes. I mean, you could be maybe altruistic and say, "Oh, well, I'm sure that they're going to use it to do future iterations of the project and whatever," but are they really? If I had seen that money came in, I probably would have just shipped Ouya number one and retired.
To a place that doesn't have extradition laws.
Yeah, definitely. But don't listen to this show retroactively if I ever decide to do a Kickstarter for something.
Yeah, I think eventually this podcast will be used as prosecution's evidence number one.
Almost certainly, but still, I wouldn't trade it. So, Ouya, terrible. Awesome. That might not be fair.
Resounding, eh.
Yeah. Everyone's just kind of like, eh. But yeah, based on the internet, I mean, you would think it really is the greatest thing that ever happened, except for all of the like real journalists who pretty much went, "This thing is garbage," after they spent so much time going, "It's gonna be so great."
Well, there's always some new company that's trying to do something like this. Do you guys remember the Phantom from a few years ago?
Yes.
Yeah, I do actually, yeah.
Yeah, and that never even materialized at all. A couple of years ago, OnLive made their little box that plugs into your television with its own special controller. And, you know, they were very excited about that, and we all know how OnLive turned out.
OnLive was awesome, though. In all fairness, they did do a really fantastic job, and that box, the controller that came with it, is awesome as well. You can just plug it into the PC and use it as a regular controller.
To think now that the crime that Phantom died for was that they thought you didn't need discs, you could just download all your games, and everybody went, "Ah, you fools." And now anybody with any sense seems to be realizing that that is where we're headed. Or maybe not, because Xbox sort of wanted to do that, and the whole world went crazy.
I was kind of hoping that would be topic this week because I wanted to talk about hype and how people almost purposefully misunderstood everything that Microsoft said over that Fortnite. It was infuriating, it really was.
I think hype will be a good topic for next week's show, which we'll actually record in probably just a handful of days because I have the time. Well, I think that seems like that's it from us, gentlemen.
All right, I'll see you again next week.
As always, thank you for having me, Joe.
Well, it's just a pleasure to have someone from England on here to give it a little bit of color. I think Charles and I might be too white, too boring for most people to care. That's not,
I
that
can
can't be
speak in
true,
an
though.
outrageous Scottish accent next time.
Yeah, well, I'll just be somebody from somewhere else. I'll do a terrible Sean Connery. No, I'm not gonna do that. That's ugh, terrible.
Do it.
Next week, I'll talk just like this through the entire podcast.
It's gonna be a lot of editing time required for this week, I'm afraid. Anyway, that's it for us at GRCast. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And now to play us out, it's Playing With Power off their Pause I'd Rather Play album. You'll recognize this if you played Ninja Gaiden 2 as the Demon's Castle cutscene. It's awesome. You'll love it. With that, we are out.